Experiencing God's Love, a ministry of St. Matthew's Baptist Church. This morning, Pastor Greg Barr continues his sermon series, Small Things, Big Difference. This morning, he talks about finances. Now from St. Matthew's Baptist Church, here's Pastor Greg Barr.
Well, as Joyce said a few minutes ago, we are starting this year with a new message series, going about it a bit differently, but the message series is entitled Small Things, Big Difference. And the idea is that many of our attempts at life change fail, not because we don't have good intentions, not because we don't want to change, but because we tend to set grand goals, and when we don't quickly achieve them, we get discouraged and give up. And so instead, why don't we focus on some small things that over time would make a big difference in our lives? And so far, we've talked about small things that make a big difference spiritually and small things that can make a big difference relationally. This morning, we want to talk about small things that make a big difference financially. Because as we begin a year, one of the most common resolutions is I want to get my financial house in order. I want to be a better manager of my resources. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, during this message series, we've invited some friends to come and tell their story and help us think about these issues a bit more clearly. And so this morning, we're going to do the same. Dale and Susan just celebrated their 28th anniversary yesterday. Been married for 28 years. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Starting out. Now, Dale and Susan, typically when we think about people who are moving toward financial freedom, sometimes we think these must be people who were born with money, or they inherited wealth along the way, or that they've just been on this trajectory in their life where they haven't experienced the kind of setbacks that other people have. But that's not your story. So why don't you tell us about your journey in finances?
Well, in 2005, we declared bankruptcy due to a failed business venture. We never thought it would ever happen to us. I had worked in the corporate world for 20 years. We had a good retirement, had a large home, life was good. But when my company sold my division, my job was eliminated, we chose to open a small business. Well, 3.5 years later, we realized that we needed to close the business. It wasn't working. And fortunately, right about that time, as we declared the bankruptcy, this church offered one of Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University classes, and we took that class. We were a little abnormal in the sense that we didn't have a ton of debt to get rid of. The bankruptcy had taken care of that part, but we had to accumulate a lot of cash in a very short time to send our daughter Belinda to college. And so the class was very helpful. I'll tell you a little bit more about it.
My family didn't have a lot of money, and From this point of view, I found out basically they were living paycheck to paycheck. And so for most of us, children were not taught money matters. It was never discussed. So we didn't learn anything about how to manage our money. And as an adult, all of a sudden we're having to learn by trial and error. And trust me, I had a lot of errors. Well, through the Financial Peace University, we learned how to make a budget, and by sticking to that budget, we were able to not only get a hold of what was happening with our money, but also how to plan our future with our money. And we were successful. We were able to, from the period of 2005 till when Belinda went into college in 2008. Well, let's see, she went in 2008. Yeah. And she graduated in 2012. With her work and her scholarship and what we were able to provide her, she graduated debt-free. And currently, she has just bought a house, and she's still debt-free except for that mortgage, and we're debt-free except for our mortgage.
So making a budget was one of those small steps. But what are some other small steps that you learned along the way that can make a big difference over time?
Well, I was going to say that my first small step is to make a budget and stick with it. But a budget doesn't work unless you have an overall reason to have a budget. You know, we all know that small steps can add up. But you have to have a reason for those small steps. So find that important small step include God in your budget. The two of the first things that are on our budget is, one, God's first, and then we pay ourselves. And then the rest of it takes care of itself.
Some other small things, maybe more practical things. Order water when you go to the restaurant. Make a grocery list. Stick with it. Don't go more than once a week. That curbs you the impulse buying, the getting something extra every time you go. Cut out a coffee at Starbucks every week. There's a lot of little things that really add up and how you can do that. Dave Ramsey talks about baby steps. In fact, the Financial Peace University is all about this 7 baby steps. And so he talks about how small differences, little things, can really turn into something big in the long run.
Okay. And we'll talk about the Financial Peace University here in just a minute as well. Any other thoughts you have that you'd like to share this morning?
I say, if you get a raise, don't put it in your checking account. Put it in your savings account.
One of the biggest things that I have enjoyed through having found a budget, and understand that I'm the free spirit, she's the nerd, and she keeps me on task, and we sit down every month and do our budget, and I contribute. But the biggest thing that I really enjoy is being able to walk to the mailbox knowing there's not going to be a bill in there. I mean, yeah, there's going to be the incidentals, but there's not going to be that credit card or that loan or anything like that. I don't have to worry about it. And that is financial peace.
You know, sometimes we wind up in financial difficulty because of a failed business or because of some catastrophic event that happens in our lives. Maybe something happens to our home or there's a medical crisis. And some of you could tell that kind of story. But, you know, the story that many of us could tell is there were some small decisions or seemingly small decisions I made along the way that led to big complications in my life financially. There were some small purchases that led to big debt over time. And I think that's the story a lot of us could tell about our financial lives. That it's not just one big event, it's a series of decisions that we made. We saw something and we wanted it. Now, we hadn't planned for it, we didn't budget for it, but we wanted it. And so we bought it and we financed it and we began paying for it. And then while we were paying for that thing, we saw something else and we wanted it, right? You know this story. And so we bought it and we financed it. And somewhere along the way, instead of investing for the future, we were spending all that we could, all that we had to pay for the past. Make no mistake. Regardless of what credit card companies might tell you, the road to freedom is not paved with financing. Debt is not your friend. But we see things and we want them, and it's so easy to get credit to buy it. Proverbs 22 verse 7 in the Bible says the borrower is the slave of the lender. Do you feel that way sometimes? You feel like all the work you're doing, it's not for you, it's not for your family, it's for the credit card company. It's to pay the debt that you own. The pain of the payment almost always exceeds the pleasure of the purchase. Well, let's say that you bought something. Let's say that, like a lot of folks, you go out and you see something and you want it. And so you go ahead and get it. And you've accumulated on average about $2,000 in credit card debt. Now, that may be on the low end. According to Bankrate.com, the average credit card interest rate this week is 16.35%. And so let's say that your credit card charged you 17% interest. And so you made the minimum payment because that's what they ask you to do, to make the minimum payment. That's not that painful over time, but it takes you 17 years to pay off that $2,000 purchase. How many things do you have 17 years later that you bought on impulse? You probably can't use it anymore. You've thrown it away, and you're still paying for it. You've certainly lost interest in it, but you're still paying interest on it, right? 17 years it would take you to pay off that debt. And at the end, you would pay $4,287 for that $2,000 purchase. It doesn't interest you anymore. The borrower is the slave of the lender. We can't enjoy financial freedom because we're so chained to the pain of the past, to the purchases of the past, be careful with that. And one of those little steps that you can take if you're in debt is to take one of those debts, take one of those credit cards, and systematically begin paying it off. Even if you are paying minimums on everything else that you owe, begin to systematically pay off that one credit card debt, maybe the one with the highest interest rate. And once you pay all of that out, then you take all the money that you're spending on that credit card and attack the next one. And begin to do what Dave Ramsey talks about is the debt snowball, to begin to get out of debt. Another small step that you can take is to make investments in your future. A lot of us, a lot of people in our culture are going to retire without planning for it. But sooner or later, you will retire, or at least you hope you will. I mean, none of us want to be working at the age of 90 at Walmart greeting people, right? But the problem is many of us haven't made a plan for that. And we don't, because sometimes we think that the amount that I could afford to invest in a retirement plan right now is so insignificant, it wouldn't make any difference. And so I'll just go out to eat a couple times this month instead. But let's say that you decided to get serious. You're 35 years old. You've never given a thought toward retirement, but now you realize someday I want to retire. And so you have $1,000 and you invest that in an account. And then you set aside $100 every month and you put it in that account. And let's say that for the next 30 years until you're 65, that earns 7% interest. Well, when you retire at the age of 65, you'll have invested, what, about $37,000 total in that account. And when you're 65, you would have a little over $130,000. Now, what if you started earlier? What if you started 10 years earlier when you were 25 and you began setting $100 a month aside? What would you have? Well, you would have $280,000. And that's if you just began to invest $100 a month. And most of us, we could do that by eliminating some other things, to do the kinds of things that Dale and Susan talked about at the grocery store or at Starbucks, to eat at home one more time a week. We could find that kind of money to invest. And then hopefully what happens is in time you get a raise and you begin investing a little bit more. So instead of investing $100 a month when you're 30, you're doing $125 or $150 or $200. And it begins to pay off over time, because when you're paying debt, compound interest works against you. But when you're investing for the future, compound interest becomes your friend. Proverbs 21, verse 5 says, "Plan carefully and you will have plenty. If you act too quickly, you'll never have enough." Plan carefully for your future. Take some small steps that would make a big difference over time. Now, to help you with that, we're going to begin a class this Wednesday night called Financial Peace University. You heard Dale and Susan talk about the impact that class had on them. So much impact that they began facilitating groups. And we begin this Wednesday with Financial Peace University, a brand new class. And what you're going to learn in there are some very practical and helpful things that you can do, some baby steps they were talking about, that will pay dividends quickly but will begin to grow exponentially over time. And the great thing about this course, I've been through the material, and the great thing about it is that you don't have to have a MBA to be able to understand it. It's very simple, very straightforward, and Dave Ramsey, who teaches it, is far from boring. And so you're going to laugh. You might cry. You're probably going to stare at each other. But you're going to learn some very practical lessons that will help you. And you're going to be challenged to begin to see money in a different way. Well, there's another couple I want you to hear from this morning, and that's Gary and Judy Jenkins. Now, if you've been around St. Matthew's very long, you know Gary and Judy. Of course, my guess is if you're here for the first time this morning, there's a good chance you've already met them too. They are wonderfully warm and welcoming people. One of the things that's always impressed me about the Jenkins, we met them before we came to St. Matthew's while we were speaking with the Pastor Search Committee. Gary And Judy took us around to look at houses, potentially where we might want to locate if we were to move here. And we were impressed even then by their heart for people. They're generous folks. They share freely of their time, of their love, of their attention, and of their finances. But the uncomfortable part for generous people is to talk about it. And so this is not a comfortable thing for them to do, but they have agreed to think through it some and to talk to us about it. So Gary and Judy, in your mind, what does it look like to live a generous life?
Let me tell you what generosity is to us. Generosity is Clara Crow, who helped me get my first job. Generosity is Tommy Hayes, who knocked on our trailer door, pitched a book at Gary, and said, "Get your real estate license." Generosity is Curtis and Bev Young, who helped us make the best financial move we've ever made. Generosity is Myra Always, who knew how to sing and shared her voice. Another group of friends, along with her, Aggie Breland, who gave me a gift that I still treasure. And Hugo and Helen Kotke, who were our mentors. We wanted to be just like them. Then someone like Glenn Torstrick, who told me just a little bit about a computer that not only saved my mind, but also a lot of time. And then there's Richard and Bonnie Fellows, who gave us garden vegetables at a time that we could really use them. And then there's Linda Alster, who took care of my children while I gave care to a dying mother. Now to us, that's generosity.
Gary, any thoughts you'd like to share?
Well, there's a couple of the words that I think about. I think about gratefulness, being grateful for all of these people that have helped us through life, being grateful for a community and a church home who taught me how to be generous. We didn't have anything, and they didn't have that much, but they taught us how to be generous. The other word is obedience. Is if you're going to watch these people and you're going to idolize these people for their generosity, then you've got to be obedient to follow that, trust that you can follow their wisdom and be obedient. So those two words, three words, trust, obedience, and gratefulness, I think probably is in my mind how I see generosity.
Okay. So there are people who influenced you along the way. There are people who have modeled what it looks like to be generous either during your childhood or people who have impacted you at some point during adulthood and have paved the way. But it's probably just as hard for those folks to say, yeah, that I see myself as being a generous person, because you always tend to look at yourself, I think, and you feel like there's so much more we could do. We're not doing nearly as much as everybody else. You know, I remember I was just thinking as Judy was sharing that I think it was in Schindler's List where Otto Schindler, I think it was, who had done all he could to hide Jewish folks during the Holocaust and save their lives, and people were lauding him for that. And he talked about, I could have done so much more if I'd sold this, or if I'd not held on to that, I could have used that money and I could have saved so many more lives. He didn't see what he had done as particularly heroic or generous, because there was so much more he could yet do. Any other thoughts you'd like to share with us about the journey toward generosity?
Well, I think another thing about generosity is what Proverbs 3, I believe 27 says, if you have it to give, give it. Don't wait and make someone beg for it. If you have it, give it, and don't expect anything in return. And I think as far as giving, we learned by trying to make a budget that we weren't real successful. But if we just went ahead and tithed first, and that would be a tenth at least, that it worked out. We don't know how it worked out. We can't explain how it worked out. Mathematically, it doesn't work, but it does work.
God.
God.
Judy had mentioned some of the people that had influenced us. How many of you brought your envelope today? Then how many of you, can I ask, remember an envelope that I had when I was in a primary Sunday school class that had marked on it, "Did you bring your Bible today? Are you present?" Come on, let's see. How many? Did you study your Sunday school lesson? Did you bring an offering?
You're telling your age.
Oh, I am older. That's what I remember about my church teaching me how to be generous. Joyce, I brought a bigger coin than you did. It was a nickel. So it was smaller. So those are the small things that I remember. My mother was my primary Sunday school teacher. And there's a lot of stories that could be told about that, but we'll save that for sometime when we got hours. That's what I think resonates with me about my young training that taught me how to be generous.
And so some of it is people who model it for us, learning those lessons along the way. Some of it is, as Judy said, taking the risk and finally stepping forward and saying, look, I'm going to be generous regardless of my circumstances. And believe it or not, the Bible has a lot to say about living generously. Matthew 10:8, freely you've received, freely give. Proverbs 22:9, a generous man will himself be blessed. 1 Timothy 6:18, command them to be good, to do good, to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. The message of the Bible is generosity. God blesses you and me so that we can in turn be a blessing to other people. And this is a countercultural message. We've talked about this before, but there's a pattern to how the world teaches us to handle our money. And you probably, some of you have written this down, some of you have memorized it, but just in case, let's put this up again. The pattern of the world is this: live, then save, then give. Because you work hard for it, everything that comes to you, you've earned it. It's yours. So use it to make yourself happy. Use it to buy things that bring you pleasure. And so live on what you bring home. Save what you can and give what's left over. But God's pattern for how we handle money is completely opposite of that. God's pattern is that we give, then we save, then we live. We give the first part of the offering, the first fruits of everything that comes to us, because we begin with the recognition that everything I have comes from the hand of God. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, Psalm 24:1 tells us. And so if everything I have comes from the hand of God, the ability to think, the health, the life I have, the breath I'm given, every bit of it is a gift from God. Then in recognition of that, to show my dependence on God and to reflect my gratitude toward God, I begin by giving something back to God, a tenth, a tithe of all that God gives me. And then knowing that the future is coming, that I need to think toward tomorrow, I save the next 10% of whatever I have. And then live on the 80% that's left over. And I think that pattern works better because if, and here's why, very practically, if I can be disciplined enough with that first 20% to handle it, if I can be disciplined enough to systematically give and save, I can be disciplined with the other 80% as well. The problem comes when I look at everything I receive, everything that comes to me as an opportunity to spend, and I wind up living on 110% of what I make. Without the kind of discipline, that's what leads us toward financial ruin. And one of the sure ways, I think, from getting out of the hold of money, because money has a grip on so many of our lives, and one sure way of getting out from under the control of money is to give it away. When you can look at money and say to money, I don't need you that much. My happiness is not dependent on you. My self-worth is not dependent on you. I can give you away. Then money somehow begins to release its grip on us. And we find out that maybe it's not that important. What if you and I were to measure our worth not by what we have, but by what we give? How would we feel differently about the control money has on us? And some of us, you know, I think all of us want to be generous. There's part of us, all of us want to live generously. I mean, we know that it's a better way to live, but we just don't think we have the ability to do it. We want to help people. We want to be generous, but we're not in a financial position to do it. And so we say, you know, sometime later when I have more, maybe later when my income's greater, maybe later when I retire, someday I'll be able to be generous, but not right now. But the truth is, generosity has little to do with what's in your wallet. Generosity has everything to do with what's in your heart. There's a great story in a book called For God So Loved He Gave. Justin Borger, he tells about a homeless woman who lived under a bridge in Chattanooga. Borger's church began helping her. They got her some clothes. They began to get her some of the medical attention that she needed to deal with some physical issues. And as she began to recover from that, the church began providing her food vouchers so that she could eat. But what happened was that she began giving those food vouchers away to other homeless people, because she knew that she was not the only one who was in need. And it was unthinkable to her that she would have food and other people would not. And so Borger approached her and he said to her, Tammy, you've got to keep those vouchers. You've got to use those vouchers for your own food. That's what you need to get healthier, to get stronger. And she responded by asking him, well, why can't I give too? Because she couldn't stand the idea that she had food while other people didn't. Generosity isn't about what you have, folks. It's about who you are. And there are people like Tammy who have nothing, who have next to nothing, and are very generous. And there are people who have great wealth who are hard-hearted toward those in need. Choose to live generously. As Judy said, it comes down to making a decision at some point that I'm going to live differently than how the world's conditioned me. I'm going to live differently. I'm going to choose to live generously. Make that choice and see what happens. See what God does in your life. See how it feels to open your heart and open your hands and live generously toward other people. Make a small decision that'll have incredible results in your life over time. Choose to live generously.
You've been listening to Experiencing God's Love, a ministry of St. Matthew's Baptist Church. This morning, you may have reached a decision concerning your relationship with God, or you may want to find spiritual guidance for your life. Contact us this week at 502-896-8882 or online at smbclouisville.org. St. Matthew's Baptist Church is conveniently located at 3515 Grandview Avenue between Breckenridge and Cannons Lanes. Join us for worship in person this morning Bible study for all ages at 9:15, followed by worship at 10:30. If that's not possible, then join us here next week at 7 for Experiencing God's Love. From St. Matthew's Baptist Church, where we're loving and leading people into a growing relationship with Jesus.